It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome in, What's Right with Nick Wright, episode 233, on a somewhat bittersweet day. You know, we got to see a great basketball game last night. We got to see Jamal Murray continue to write an NBA story that is without precedent, really. And we also got to see a guy who is doing his best to climb up the NBA pantheon in Nikola Jokic show you how great players, truly historically great players, even in games where they don't seem to have it and are uncharacteristically sloppy, not that sharp, you're like, oh, he still had 25, 20, and 9 as he climbs up the all-time ranks. And it was against the backdrop of, and this is the case with every playoff game LeBron plays in at this point, what could be the final playoff game of the career of the greatest player of all time. And so we will get into all of that. We will also do a draft recap. Also, shout out and happy, I can't believe it, 19th birthday to one of my favorite co-hosts, one of my three favorite children, and one of my four favorite human beings to ever live, Diora, as she wakes up in sunny Santa Cruz, California this morning, 19 years old. So a very happy birthday to my beloved daughter, Demonze, happy if you would Scoot. Like, before we start the show. You. There you go.
I'm going to talk. I'll talk to Diora soon.
No, I know you will, sorry. But if you wanted to get it on the record to the audience, that's fine too. Episode 233, here's what missed the cut. Not on today's show, the Prince gets his fifth-year option picked up. The Celtics take a 3-1 lead on the Heat, but it's a costly one, as Porzingis seems to... A lot of calf injuries going around, and in a series watched by hundreds and hundreds of people, the Thunder do in fact sweep the New Orleans Pelicans, and this is the reward you get for being the one seed. You get a walkover in round one as you prepare for a round two opponent that's going to have just played a 6 or 7 game war in the Clippers or the Mavs. But of course, we must start, Demonze, with the news of the day, and that is the Nuggets complete the closest gentleman sweep in NBA history, 4 games to 1. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so they did finish the close gentleman sweep. LeBron, not too much to lose there. I think he had a lot to gain. But yeah, so Ham, with that said, Ham is likely out. LA wants to re-sign LeBron, and sounds like they'd be open to signing or drafting Bronny. But so on the bright side of all these things, it's an improvement from last year, correct?
Well, okay. So, I mean, it's not getting swept, but last year was, of course, in the conference finals. This was in round one. And I will give the Nuggets and Jokic and Murray their flowers, I promise. But that isn't where I want to start today's show. I want to start with the Lakers side of things big picture, and then the LeBron James of it all. So this Lakers team had deep playoff run upside if everything fell right for them in relation to their aging superstars' health and productivity. And what makes this season so such a tough pill to swallow and so bittersweet for, and mostly just bitter, for Laker fans is no matter what bill of goods Darvin Ham tries to sell you about health of the roster and about people being focused on rotations when it's about availability, the fact of the matter is this. The Lakers' four best players played 82, 76, 76, and 71 games. They were remarkably healthy. And there are a lot of reasons why the Lakers got off to their 24-25 start, as The Athletic did a pretty good job of laying out in its article today. The total refusal to start your best players until the 50-game mark of the season certainly didn't help, which put them behind the eight ball. And as I said the day of the trade deadline, because as much crap as Darvin Ham gets fairly to a degree, to me the main villain of this Lakers season is not the head coach, but is the front office that stood pat at the deadline, that didn't even make any moves around the margins for reasons that never made sense to me. And this isn't second guessing, this was first guessing. When I saw a team like Dallas just make the minor add of, you know what, let's go ahead and trade for Daniel Gafford because we think he can give us some quality backup 5 minutes. And folks said to me, are you, you know, Nick, you're whining about not getting Daniel Gafford. That's going to make the difference. Well, when you're playing the defending champs in round one and games two and games five literally come down to the final shot of the game, you do wonder if 10 minutes from Daniel Gafford rather than 10 minutes from Jackson Hayes, would that have been worth one possession? Would that have been worth one possession in a couple of games? Maybe, maybe not. And so I don't think it was a well-coached team. I don't think it was a well-put-together team. And I think that, yes, right now, Jokic and Jamal are better than LeBron and AD. That's not really deniable. But it is close enough that the difference in this series was supporting cast members. The difference in this series was Michael Porter Jr., shout out to him, being unbelievable under the backdrop of true family tragedy. Under the backdrop of his brother being banned from the league and his other brother being sent to prison, Michael Porter Jr. just played the best basketball of his life. 23-8 a night on 55-49 splits. So it's a great job by him. He deserves credit. Jamal Murray, who again I'll get to more in depth, not 100%, not shooting great throughout the series. Hits a walk-off in game two, and yesterday plays well throughout the entirety of the game on one leg and hits another semi-walk-off. And then, of course, there's Joker, but what once again is going to be tough to swallow for Laker fans is, as because Joker's so great, it's not like you're shocked by his production. You went into the series probably anticipating about this level of production. He didn't hit those insane shot clock beating heaves like he did last year. He didn't have one, like, just absolutely steal your soul half like he did game one last year. And it just wasn't enough. And now, if folks want to say, well, you know, AD needed to be better, I guess. AD, did he wear down at the end of these games? Sure.
Came down to one possession. I think they could hit some free throws. LeBron hit. He missed one after and one. Austin Reeves took a turnaround mid-range as like one of the last shots. He also missed two free throws. I know,
that killed me. He didn't miss two late,
but like I'm saying, it came down to a possession. Austin Reeves missed two or three free throws on a fouled three-point shot. And it's just little stuff like that.
And then Dinwiddie, who's an 88% free throw shooter in the fourth quarter, missed two. Yeah, does, of course. So there are things the Lakers could have done. There's no excuses here. And the Nuggets are the better team. Do I think there are worlds that exist where right now it's 3-2 Lakers? Sure. Do I think in the majority of basketball universes, right now, it's 3-2 Nuggets? Yeah, I do. I think a 4-1 Nuggets series win is not an outlier result, but an unlikely result given how these games were played. But it's what happened. And the other factor of it is, I do wonder how much the Lakers would have left in the tank even if they were to get past the Nuggets in this round with a rested, young, hungry, ferocious Timberwolves team waiting for a week. And Denver is more likely to be up to that challenge. So all that's, you know, I think that is a fair, sober-minded commentary. Now I do want to talk about what we just saw from LeBron James. Because what's going to happen on television today, my show included, is there's going to be the micro on the game. There's going to be the Nugget side of things, well deserved. And then there is going to be looking out way off in the distance at LeBron's future. And there's not going to be a hell of a lot of this. It is unfathomable and historically unprecedented by a factor of 10 that the oldest player in the league just played in that series at that level for those number of minutes at that efficiency. The oldest guy in the league who has played more minutes than anyone ever, who has played more playoff games than anyone ever, who has more wear and tear than anybody in the history of the sport, just played a series against the defending champs, playing 41 minutes a night, giving you 28-7-9 on 57% from the field. 57%. That guy, this season, in year 21, when the entirety of basketball history, pardon me, combined in year 21, scored like 1,200 points and had a few hundred rebounds, put together all of them, this year played 71 games in the regular season, 72 actually, because the play-in tournament, the in-season tournament final doesn't count. Then you add the play-in tournament, so we're now at 73. Five playoff games, gave you 78 games of basketball at 26-7-8 on 54% from the field and 41% from three. That in this series led the whole series in the newly in vogue stocks category, steals and blocks combined, played for the most part B+, A- defense, A-level offense, and showed no signs of slowing down. Again, this is where I don't think LeBron is done, but LeBron is deeper into his career than any of the other all-time legends. So if he were done, he played longer than everybody else. So how did everybody else look at the end? Kareem, 10 points, 4 rebounds a game. That's how it ended for Kareem. Michael Jordan, as a Wizard, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 44% from the field. Kobe Bryant, at the end, how did it look? 17 points, 4 assists on 36% from the field. Tim Duncan, how did it look? Tim Duncan, 9 points, 7 rebounds on 49% from the field. He's deeper into his career than any of those all-time legends got, and still performing at this level. And the only reason you can't say it's unprecedented across sports is because, to his credit, what we just saw Tom Brady do. But it is Brady-esque in that regard. And except somehow the athleticism is still there, the ability to impact winning while not at the level LeBron. This is something I got in an argument with Brew about a few weeks ago, and I kind of want to spend time on it here. Then we'll talk future. Then we'll talk Jamal Murray. There's no question LeBron does not impact winning as much as younger LeBron or peak LeBron. But let's ask it in a different way. How many guys in the league right now impact winning more than LeBron James? Does he impact winning more than Kevin Durant does?
Yeah.
Yes. Does he impact winning more than Kawhi Leonard does? Yes. Does he impact winning more than Steph Curry does? Yes. Does he impact winning more than Joker? No. Does he impact winning right now more than Luka? I don't think so. Does he impact winning more than a healthy Giannis? No. Does he impact winning more right now than Shea? Probably not. Does he impact winning right now more than Anthony Edwards? Maybe not. But that's 5 guys. And DeMonte, I see a little twinkle in your eye. Is there someone you think I'm leaving out? If there is, it's fair. Like, go ahead. Like, I'm just doing them off the top of my head.
Oh, no, I was thinking about guys on my team, but Tatum and Brown, it's more of a collective thing.
I think it's close, right?
Right.
Like, maybe people will disagree. And some of this just has to do with history and understanding how to control games and all of that. But do I think the Celtics would have a better, worse, or the same championship chance if you switched Jason Tatum and LeBron James? I don't think it'd be worse. I don't. I don't think they take a step backwards under that scenario. Now, can't, like that, I mean, maybe you disagree.
So you're saying that
right now you took Tatum off the Celtics and put LeBron in his place, does the team have a better chance of winning the championship, right, a worse chance of winning the championship, or the same? My answer is I think it's about the same. I don't think they get worse. Certainly, if you switched out Jaylen Brown for LeBron, that team gets better. So again, like, who are the guys who have, are there 10 guys in the league? Devin Booker is a perennial All-NBA guy. Who has a bigger impact on winning? 39-year-old, year 21 LeBron James or Devin Booker? It's hands down LeBron. It's not even a question, at least my opinion. So
you're saying he's like top 10 guys that impact the game the most?
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
5 mark.
That is exactly what I'm saying. What I am saying is that we've done this weird thing this year where instead of comparing LeBron to other players that we think are great right now, we're comparing LeBron to older versions or younger versions, previous versions of LeBron. And he doesn't pass that test. But does he pass the, would I rather have him right now than Tyrese Haliburton, the best player on a team that's going to be in round two? Yes, I would. Would I rather have him right now more than Donovan Mitchell, guy who's going to be the best player on a team in round two? Yes, I would. What, like the, there, and I, you know what, I should have included Jalen Brunson in that first category because what Brunson is doing is remarkable. It's absolutely remarkable and he deserves credit. But my, you can't get to 10 guys and he's the oldest player in the sport. Last, do you know who the oldest player in the sport was last year, DeMonze? And I'm not going to include Udonis Haslem because he was basically a coach for 3 years.
No.
Not including Udonis Haslem. The oldest player in the NBA last year.
I feel like I knew.
Andre Iguodala.
Iguodala, okay.
Andre Iguodala. He scored 17 points on the season. Played in 8 games. That was the oldest guy. Like, the history of when you're the oldest guy in the league, you're, it's not that you're not doing this, it's that you're not doing anything within 10 standard deviations of this. So, what do I want LeBron to do next? I mean, I'd like him to come to the Knicks, personally. Yes, that's a little selfish because I live here. It also would be an unbelievable final act.
Are you getting season
tickets? Because I don't think the Knicks are going
to... If he goes to New York?
Well, they have to sell a kidney, but yeah. I mean, Knicks season tickets already are through the roof. You get LeBron James. But they need a power forward. And, yeah. I mean, you're seeing what they're doing without Julius Randle. I know, you know, Julius Randle, good regular season, bad playoff guy. It is an iconic franchise that has not won in 53 years. And as great as this season is going, they're not winning the title this year.
You think Tibbs would be smart with his usage?
Well, so I do wonder that. Now, there's a lot of reasons that's not going to happen. There's, you know, some not a great history between World Wide West and Leon Rose and Rich and LeBron. And there's, you know, and LeBron's comments about Jim Dolan. All those things, I understand why it's not likely. But that's where he could win a championship. He would help get them over the top. It's an iconic franchise, and it would truly add to his legend. Obviously, I mean, I've gone through it before. The Sixers, who have a ton of cap space, make sense. The Cavs are an interesting one. They could make sense. But what do I think is going to happen? I think he's going to stay with the Lakers. I think he's going to leverage his spot with the Lakers to get them to draft Bronny in the second round to get a 3-year full max with a no trade clause and see if they can make a few moves and he can stay at this level and they can be back in it again. That's what I think's going to happen. Is that what I want to happen? No. Is that what I think is his single best chance at winning a championship? No. But do I think LeBron James owes anybody anything when it comes to his basketball future at this point? Of course not. The guy has literally given more to the game than any player ever. He has played more than any player ever. He has entertained us for longer than any player ever. He can do whatever he damn well chooses.
What do you think happens if somebody ends up drafting Bronny before the Lakers, though?
So that is actually a conversation we're going to have on First Things First today, which is, should a different team draft Bronny
hold him ransom
before the 55th pick? And it's worth a discussion. It really is. Let's just go to the second round, okay?
The Spurs?
See, I don't think the Spurs, Spurs... but they do have a second round pick. They have the 35th pick.
Right.
I don't think the Spurs make sense because they want, you know, it to be a Wimby-based development.
Slow grow that one.
The Knicks are drafting at 38. The Sixers are drafting at 41. The Heat are drafting at 43. The Clippers are drafting at 46. Now, the Clippers have no money, so take them out of it.
Right.
The Warriors are drafting at 52. If I were running any of those teams, would I at least have a conversation about, okay, hey, if we draft him, are you coming here? And if so, you said ransom, like that's a different thing, which is like, we're not having a conversation. We're just drafting him. And if you want to play with him, I guess you're coming here. Right. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think a team is going to
try to leverage him like that.
I think that there is too much. I think there is too much league wide respect and appreciation for what LeBron
has given
the game. Right, like
people would blackball the team damn near.
Yeah, then all of a sudden, and also it would seem like this is, it'd be one thing if Bronny, this is an odd spot, because if Bronny were a better prospect, right? If he were a guy that if his name was Bronny Jameson instead of James, that a team's like, hey, we have a late round one, early round two grade on him, then it would be totally legitimate for a team to say, we're not consulting with LeBron James. This is a player we like who we think can come in and help us. We're drafting him. It doesn't appear that that's the case. What appears to be the case right now is there are some NBA teams that look at him as a long-term developmental prospect. A lot of NBA teams that right now look at him as undraftable. And if he were to be drafted, it would be because of the family connection, right? And so if he were a great, you know, a potential lottery pick, then a team would just take him because they want him, right? So I think the whole thing is
so it's for a team that could, like, win a chip next year or, like, is, like, trying to win a championship.
Exactly right. A team that thinks they're a piece away. And would want to see if that would sway LeBron. That's what it would be. All right, now, as promised, because we're going to have a lot of time to talk about Nuggets Timberwolves later, you know, on Thursday, because that series don't start till Saturday. I do want to talk about Jamal Murray because I cannot find a cross-sport comp for him. And by the way, if you're watching on YouTube and you can think of one in the NBA or in another sport, please send it my way. But Jamal Murray was never an All-Star, never All-NBA, was a mid-lottery pick who in the regular season in his career has been a good player. I mean, he was all rookie second team, right? He's been a good player in the regular season. Injuries have, you know, done things to him, but at no point, and this isn't my take, this is the NBA voters' take, at no point in his career, at the end of a year, have people said he is one of the six best guards in basketball. At no point in his career has he, by the All-Star break, been considered, whether because of injury or availability or play, an All-Star level player. And he now is building a truly iconic postseason resume. All right? Full list in NBA history of guys with more 50-point playoff games than Jamal Murray. Michael Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, Allen Iverson. That's the list. He has two. That's the full list of people with more than two. He was unbelievable in the playoffs. The bubble playoffs going to the conference finals. He then was hurt for 2 years and the team couldn't get out of round one year and couldn't get out of round two the next year. He then came back. They never faced elimination and won the title. And the following year, hit a buzzer beater to cement a 20-point comeback in game two, a damn near buzzer beater to win the series in game five, and is just getting started. I've never seen a career like this. For a guy who is a good player in the regular season.
Is he not one of the most mid-range taking players right now? Like he's also a guy that I feel like it's bread and butter in there for him. And you've always said the mid-range.
He's good at the mid-range, but
I mean, he's good at shooting. He's good at shooting everywhere.
I don't know if, yeah. I mean, the this year, he took 16 shots a game, six threes a game, so 10 non-threes. You got to assume three or four of those non-threes are at the rim or, you know, in the paint.
Right.
So, you know, maybe five mid-range shots a game. But playoff career, 58 games. 25 points on 47-40-90 splits. Regular season career, 18 points on 45-38-87 splits. And even if you're like, well, let's just go his last 5 years, okay? Since he became who he is. In the regular season, 20 points, 5 assists, 46-39 splits. In that same span in the postseason, 25 points, 6 assists on 47-40 splits. He's just a killer. Shout out to him, man. It is in a lot of ways kind of the reverse Embiid, sadly.
Should they have fouled
a guy
him?
Who is... So that's like a galaxy brain take that I think in this unique circumstance maybe is yes. So teams never foul when tied. But if you are when tied and the other team's going to be able to take the last shot, teams never foul. If you're the older team, and the team that is more likely to be on fumes, and the team that is, you know, the underdog,
and you know
being
you
in
no
a situation
timeouts.
Where your best case... Well, I actually think, yeah, the no timeouts to me thing was less relevant to the foul or not foul, because Denver's going to basically be holding for the last... I guess it is relevant, but the... you're playing for a stop there. is what you're doing there either way. There's an argument to be made. Foul and have the ball down two or down one if he misses one and take your chances that way and just try to end it rather than play for overtime. It would be, no one's ever done it on purpose. I think there are certain circumstances where it actually would be plus EV and a team playing a 39-year-old plus your other superstar can't raise his left arm above his head plus you're at altitude and gassed, all of those things, you can make an
and
argument.
And Jamal Murray is the final, like with everything that you were saying about Jamal Murray and how deadly he is at that time of the game, like probably want to get him on the free throw line so you can give yourself a chance. But yeah, they put a bunch of Jamal Murray comps in here. Julian Edelman was the
one
that
stood out to me. Here's the thing. So people brought up Eli. I don't think that's actually a good comp. Because here's the thing about Eli. Eli had two unbelievable playoff runs as far as his team success. He was awesome on the second one. He was decent on the pretty more than decent. He was very good on the first one. But he had four other postseason appearances where they lost their first playoff game. Eli made the playoffs six times and was one and done four of them and then won the two Super Bowls. That's not what we're seeing with Jamal Murray. Julian Edelman is maybe a decent one, but I don't think Julian Edelman, let me look. I think he was more about the reason he has those postseason records is the number of playoff games he played and the opportunities, not because he was this playoff juggernaut. And, you know, I'll fact check myself on it. Edelman, well, at the end, he did have some really monster playoff games. That is true. So maybe Edelman is the... Maybe? Edelman's not a bad one, I guess. And people say Robert Horry. Robert Horry wasn't all of a sudden some, like, he wasn't great. An all-star level player in these playoff games, he just hit huge shots. And Murray's doing more than that. All right, let's move on. This is 40 minutes on the opening topic. We can just keep going, DeMonte.
Yeah, so Anthony Edwards has taken the league by storm. You mentioned a few shows ago that this could be the NBA's torch passing. It's now Kevin Durant, Steph, and LeBron are all in Cancun. Did Anthony Edwards just become the guy of the NBA?
Well, so a couple things that I think is funny. Folks are, real quick on the first piece of it, a thing that's going all around Twitter is, oh my goodness, these are the first playoffs since 2005 that LeBron, Steph, and KD, none of them are in. And it's like, yes, that is true. But if I may, LeBron is doing a lot of that heavy lifting. Durant was not in the league until the 08 playoffs. Steph was not in the league until the 2010 playoffs. Those guys didn't make a postseason. Durant's first postseason that he played in was 2010. Curry's first postseason that he played in was it 2012? Was 2013. So yes, it is true. This is the first playoffs without the three of them. But that is mostly a LeBron James stat. Those guys are, you know, it's nice that they get to be a part of it. But set that aside. Man, Anthony Edwards is so electric. And I sounded a little like jingoistic on TV yesterday. But I'm, you know, sorry, not sorry. There is I know it's become very in vogue to bleep on American-born NBA players like, all the MVPs are foreign-born guys. They have more skill over there. They're taught the game better. There has never been, like, Anthony Edwards is a vintage American NBA player, and I love it. He is going to beat you from every single level and dunk on your face as great as, and they are the best players in the league right now, I give them credit, as great as the international players are, none of them, we're yet to see one with the best American-born players' full arsenal. Now, it doesn't mean they're not better, right? But that, like,
athleticism.
Giannis has the athleticism, right?
Yeah.
But he doesn't have the full rounded out game.
Yeah.
Jokic can do, and Luka can do everything offensively without the athleticism, right? Anthony Edwards is going to shit talk you, like Luka's got that too. Block you at the rim, dunk on your head. I know you. Luka annoys you. I know he does. dunk on your face. I just love him. And he's, Demonze, he's 22 years old.
Yeah.
22.
Dude.
So,
and he's hungry.
Real quick, guys. Full list. Last 50 years. Hold on, real quick. Last 50 years. Full list of guys, 22 or under, to lead a team, be the unquestioned best player on a deep playoff run, finals, conference finals, something like that. Kevin Durant, LeBron James. That's the complete list. That's it. Anthony Edwards, 22 years old now. I'm not saying he's going to do it, but if he were to do it, he enters hallowed ground. Luka did it at 23. Shaq did it at 23. Now, Kobe did it young, but that was, and Kobe was unbelievable, but that was Shaq's team. You know, Shaq was the best guy. I'm excited to see how far Anthony Edwards can take this. All right, next.
All right, so things aren't looking super sunny in Philadelphia. Joel Embiid isn't liking the way that the playoff series is turning out, and he's getting dirties. He's hitting people. But he's even calling out fans for not coming to the game. At this point, do you think Joel Embiid has done irreversible damage to his image? I didn't see that. What's going on there?
What? You didn't see what? Go ahead.
I didn't see him call. I don't know if it was a tweet or if he was like doing that in like a presser or something.
Oh, about the fans?
The fans not coming to the games.
Okay, so I was at that game in Philly on Sunday. And I don't know if you saw, Demonze, this was a good example of the difference. You know what? Let me tell a quick story. Hold on. I'm going to interrupt myself as I often do. Remind me to tell a story about where I was sitting, Demonze, okay?
Nope.
Don't forget to remind me. That crowd did sound like MSG. The Madison Square Garden tickets are so expensive. Though, let me give you an example, Demonze. Those seats that you had for Clippers Mavs, right? Those seats that you had for Clippers Mavs, which, again, it's Los Angeles. So it's not like they are a super cheap ticket, but it is the Clippers. Those seats were $450. They were sideline for two tickets, $450. Sideline, call it 16th, 18th row. Okay?
Right.
Those same exact two tickets at MSG tonight are $5,200. When I say it is,
I was thinking 1500.
10x. No, they're 2600 a seat for those seats, Demonze. And those were good seats, but they weren't life-changing seats. The cheapest ticket in the building, okay? Right now, the cheapest
$250?
This can't be right. The cheapest ticket in the building. It is section 317. Top bowl of MSG in the corner are $470 each. Okay? So what's happened is some of the most diehard Knicks fans who aren't corporate tickets, who don't have a ton of money, they figured out cheaper to go to Philly. Cheaper to make the drive or take the train to Philadelphia in order to go to the game. And it was like a 50-50 Knicks-Sixers crowd. It was unbelievable. So that was Embiid's frustration. I will cut Embiid slack in this regard, man. He is playing on one leg. His half his face is collapsed due to Bell's palsy. When he goes to the bench, the team dies. So he has to play the whole game. And by the fourth quarter, he's exhausted. What I was saying earlier when I said Jamal is the reverse Embiid, what I mean is Jamal is a good regular season player who in the playoffs is unbelievable. Embiid historically has been an unbelievable regular season player who in the playoffs is just good. And so that this postseason, I actually think he's played well under adverse circumstances. And also, man, Jalen Brunson, like, I'm excited for the game tonight. Jalen Brunson, first player in NBA history to have 85 points and 20 assists in consecutive playoff games. First player in NBA history. No one's ever done it. And that brings me to the story I wanted you to remind me to tell, which was I was right next to DeMonze, the scorer's table, in the between the Knicks bench and the scorer's table for this Sixers-Knicks game, okay? So the way the seats work is there's true courtside, feet on the wood, where Micah Parsons and C.J. Stroud were sitting. There's that. There's second row courtside, feet on the wood, but there's a row of people in front of you. And then there's row one in the actual, like, stands, right? I was row one in the stands. So not courtside, but pretty unbelievable seats.
Great.
And I'm between the Knicks bench and the scorer's table. Into the first quarter. Jalen Brunson's dad, Rick Brunson, who is played in the NBA for a long time, went to Temple, a Philly legend, and Knicks assistant coach, sees me. And is smiling. He's like, hey, you owe my son an apology. And I'm like, yo, what do you mean? He's like, you owe him an apology. And I think this is in relation to my it was when the Knicks signed Jalen Brunson 3 years, you know, we were still remote from the Mavs. So a couple years ago, I was like, listen, he's a good player. But if you think he's going to be the best player on a, you know, a high-level team, you're out of your mind, essentially. I thought of him what I think almost everyone thought of him. It's not like I was like, this guy stinks, this whatever it is. I was like, he's a good player. But he's not, if he's your best player, you're not a good team. And I was wrong. Like, flatly, he's been unbelievable. And so what Rick didn't know was I have already, you know, I don't know if I've said I'm sorry. I don't know that I need to apologize, but I have owned that I was wrong. And so I was like, no, I was like, I already did. He was like, no, you need to do it on TV. I'm like, no, I already did. I was like, I had him fourth on my MVP ballot, which I didn't really explain to him. I don't actually have a ballot, but I pretend I have a ballot and I release it anyway. But like on my fake MVP ballot, I had him fourth. And he was like, okay. And so now we're having like a cool back and forth. But you know how I talk. I talk with my hands. He does the same thing. And at this point, he has walked. So he's kind of like between the person that's true courtside and the person at the scorer's table who's in charge of the Knicks challenges. I have stood up and I am right behind the person who's second row courtside. And we are 2 feet apart, laughing or whatever, but talking with our hands. And the ref comes over and asks Rick if he wants me to be thrown out. To be ejected. And by the way, man, shout out to Rick Brunson for being a good dude, because he was like, no. He's like, we're cool. We're just talking. You know what I mean? Everything's all good. We're having fun. But Rick Brunson could have really screwed me there. He could have been like, yep, get him out of here. Like, that, like, do you know how mortifying that would have been?
What point in the game was that?
It was between the first and the second quarter. It would have been like, it was right before they came back from commercial. Like, can you imagine if on the Richard Jefferson broadcast, they're like, oh, the referee's kicking a fan out and it's me? Like, and so, and again, like, well, I wasn't doing anything wrong, but the ref just saw.
Yeah.
Rick's back. No,
he saw one of the players' dads arguing with what he thought was just a fan.
Well, he probably knows who you are, my bad.
He could. Right.
No. I don't think the ref did know who I was, and it's fine. But he saw a coach having a very demonstrative discussion with a fan, and now they have both, like, stood, and they're. We weren't nose, like, you know what I mean?
Right.
And again, it was 100% friendly, but it was so funny that the ref just saw it. And in that moment, I was like, oh, man, he really could have screwed me there. He could have been like, yep, get him out of here. He said my son was a bad contract.
Shout out to Mr.
Throw
Brunson.
His ass out. Yeah, no, it was great. Now, one added piece of it, the funny Rick Brunson anecdote, and then we really got to move on. Brew covered Rick in the NBA and mentions him regularly in two contexts. One is, whenever we talk summer league, he says, man, I was at a summer league once when Rick Brunson looked like Jason Kidd. And he uses that as an example as to why you shouldn't overrate summer league. But the other reason he mentions Rick Brunson a lot is because Brew is just the right age where if you covered somebody's dad and that kid's now playing, you're just going to call the kid the dad's name. So basically every time we have a Jalen Brunson discussion, Brew calls him Rick Brunson and we just let it go. So if anything, we should be a beloved show in the Brunson household for father and son. But yeah, so that's my anecdote from Philly. Take a quick break. Come right back. Play Private Investigator.
This is a special alert to all Americans who own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles, with an auto warranty about to expire, or with no warranty coverage at all. With summer quickly approaching, CarShield is offering a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that is available to the public to save any driver out-of-pocket expenses on future auto repairs. Call now to find out how you can pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs, like AC parts and check engine light mysteries. See why CarShield is voted America's most trusted vehicle protection company, and see why our commitment to our customers has landed us an A rating with the Better Business Bureau. We have live reps here to answer all your questions. Drivers who are covered will not have to pay for covered repairs again. This protection plan is at an all-time low. Additionally, drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Visit us for your free quick quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio. What do you have to lose? Visit carshield.com/audio.
What's up, everyone? It's Nick Wright, and I got something exciting to talk to you about today. Angie, your ultimate destination for getting all your jobs done well. Now, Angie isn't just your average home services marketplace. It's a game changer. With over 150 million homeowners served and a network of over 200,000 skilled pros, Angie has experience and expertise to tackle any project with ease. Whether you're looking to spruce up your backyard or undergo a major home renovation, Angie's got your back. And their pros are locally based, often running small businesses right in your community. And here's the best part. Angie makes the process seamless. From researching and comparing pros to scheduling services at your convenience, Angie's user-friendly platform puts you in control. So why settle for anything less than perfection when it comes to your home? With Angie, you can trust every project will be completed with the utmost care and professionalism. So get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today to discover why homeowners across the nation are turning to Angie to get all their jobs done well. All right, welcome back in. What's Right with Nick Wright, episode 233. DeMonze, let's get right to it. We're going to play a game. Nick Wright, Private Investigator. Lead us.
Yes, we are playing Nick Wright, Private Investigator today. Life is full of mysteries. Who was D.B. Cooper? Are aliens real? Why couldn't the Lakers ever defend a backdoor cut by Aaron Gordon? I'll give you a hint. Luckily, there's
what
one man.
What was that for?
It's Greybeard. old man.
Oh, gotcha.
Luckily, there is one man capable of solving the biggest mysteries in sports. Nick Wright, Private Investigator.
Yeah, okay.
All right, we got this Falcons Penix situation. The station has been blowing up with calls of criminal activity involving the Falcons draft. Atlanta selected Michael Penix Jr. at number 8, despite paying Kirk Cousins $180 million. One of these moves has to be a waste. So, Detective Wright, who is getting robbed?
First and foremost, I think it's Michael Penix. I know people are like, you got to feel bad for Kirk. He didn't sign up for this. Listen, when you're a NFL financial mercenary, you all of a sudden put yourself in a position where a team might not have loyalty to you because you never played a snap for him. This can happen. So, like, I don't really feel for Kirk. Penix, on the other hand, is 24 years old, and now they're setting him up to where, their alleged plan is for him to not play till he's 26. That's brutal. So I feel, first and foremost, I feel bad for Penix. Secondly, I feel badly for Atlanta Falcons fans, who, as I explained on Friday, their team has prioritized not bottoming out over trying to be great and win the first Super Bowl in the history of the franchise. And you cannot convince me that this was a coherent offseason. Because, first of all, they had 30 people for pre-draft visits. Penix wasn't one of them. That's odd. Second of all, they gave Kirk Cousins a no-trade clause in his contract. Well, that doesn't make sense. Third of all, they structured the contract so trading him, even if he were to waive the no-trade clause in a year, is incredibly punitive to them cap-wise when they could have still guaranteed him all that money but made it to where it's not punitive for them to trade him a year from now, which leads me to believe this was not their original plan. And that makes it unjustifiable because the college football season was over. You knew your cap situation. You knew the draft order before free agency started. So it's not like you got new information. And so they just don't want to ever have the Desmond Ridder situation at quarterback again. But you should have either had the courage of your convictions and took Penix and used this $100 million on defensive players to help the team and build a great team around him, or sign Kirk and use the 8th overall pick to draft the first defensive player off the board. Instead, they went quarterback with their two biggest offseason assets, their cap space and the 8th pick. And so, yes, that should prevent them from it being a total disaster, but it also puts a ceiling on them. So I feel most badly for Michael Penix and second most badly for Falcons fans. Next.
Bradley Beal be damned. What do you think? This is a movie, man. Phoenix tried to pull off a but botched the whole operation. Detective Wright, who deserves the most blame for Phoenix being swept?
Matt Ishbia bought the team and then just couldn't help himself. Bought the team and then immediately trades 70% of their future assets and picks and everything for Kevin Durant. And then this offseason trades the rest of it for Bradley Beal. And so, listen, we can put it on Durant again. Like, who are we comparing Durant to? Are we comparing Durant to prime Durant? That's unfair. Are we comparing Durant to the rest of the league? He is still one of the 15 best players in the league. He had a good series. He's 36 years old. He's not going to be able to single-handedly carry you. And honestly, that's never really been exactly who he is. Booker is, you know, he has a lot of A-plus playoff games and a lot of D-minus playoff games. Not a ton of in the middle. And the roster was poorly built. Some of us saw it coming. Some of us said the Bradley Beal trade was insane, and using all your remaining assets to add one piece that is the piece you least need, a perimeter scorer, when you need a point guard and you need bigs, we told you that was a problem to begin with. And now you have, you don't control any of your own picks. You don't have any second round picks left even. Beal's got a no trade. It's kind of a disaster for them. Next.
So we've got a pretty big file on KD leaving teams. Detective Wright, Do you suspect KD will demand another trade?
So that's tricky, man. You look great there, Demaze. It's tricky to say whether or not he'll demand another trade. I would like to see him elsewhere, but a fifth team would be weird.
Is there not?
They can't trade. Go ahead.
I guess I'm not a detective, but like, is there not, like, if any team that KD has ever been on, is this not the situation that he should leave the most?
No, I mean, that's a great point. But you wonder if he's just going to feel like, man.
What are the fans?
I handpicked the situation. To be fair, KD, he's only, you know, demanded a trade, well, I guess twice, but from the same team twice. Really out of one spot. He left Oklahoma City in free agency. He left the Warriors in free agency. Totally is right. But yeah, they are screwed. I mean, there's no question about it. They have to make, and you probably would get more for Booker because Booker's younger. I know folks would love to see Durant go to Oklahoma City. I don't know if Oklahoma City wants, I don't know what they want to do. I mean, Durant's 36, OKC's the one seed, they're rolling. Now, I'll tell you a team that I could see, but then for Durant, it's weird. It's like, am I kind of copying LeBron? You don't want to do that, but Miami makes sense. The trade package that Miami was ready to offer for Damian Lillard, finding a way to offer that for Kevin Durant, I mean, that one makes sense, but I don't know what he's going to do, to be honest with you. All right, next.
Jalen Brunson dropped the Knicks playoff record 47 points on Sunday. Not even you, who has been on their beat for decades, saw Brunson becoming the star he has in New York. Besides Rick. Detective Wright, How do we all miss the clues?
Well, because there's not a lot of precedent in all of NBA history for a player his size dominating the way he does. Just isn't. A guy as short as he is being this type of scorer, we saw it for a year with Celtics Isaiah Thomas, but we kind of knew that was smoke and mirrors. We knew that wasn't real. You know, the original Isaiah Thomas obviously dominated, but it was more of a floor game. Him putting up these types of, and I know he was great in his last playoffs with Dallas, but him carrying a team this way, and it's not, keep in mind, he scored 47. The team scored 97. He had 47 and 10 for a team that didn't break 100. So I don't think people really missed. I mean, I guess they did, but it's reasonable. When in all of NBA history, the only guys under 6'6 to be the unquestioned best player on a champion are Steph Curry and Isaiah Thomas. To think a guy who's not even 6 feet tall is going to do what he's done, it's just, it's hard to predict. It's hard to see coming. And so, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. All right, next.
It's never too early for a mock draft or to bet on the draft. Something doesn't smell right, though. Shedeur Sanders is even money to be the number one pick. Detective Wright, is this the squarest bet you've ever seen?
It's up there, man. It doesn't get much squarer than making a bet at even odds that involves you essentially loaning a sportsbook your money interest-free for 363 days. Like, hey, here you go. Take my money. I get zero, you know, return, interest or investment, and I'll see if I can get, you know, that even money back. It's, yeah, of all the pot, if you're going to do a long-term futures bet, you have to incorporate the opportunity cost of the fact that that money is sitting there interest-free for you. Meanwhile, the sports book gets to invest it and make a return on it. Like, that is just, it's just an, I am not here to tell people not to gamble on sports because I gamble on sports. But do not, if you want to make this bet, find a human being you can make it with, that you have good credit with, that you just, the loser pays up on, you know, once it comes in, not that it's held in escrow.
All right, so I got Shedeur Sanders going number one, me and you. Okay. I'll give you $150.
You want it?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. I was like, I don't think that's a good bet, buddy. All right, quick break. Answer your questions next. What's right? Wow, what a moment. Sometimes, DeMonze, hard work pays off. Dedication, hard work, just in. How about this? From the mock draft database, which graded every single public mock draft there was. All of it. Across all hundreds of mock drafts. People that do this professionally. People that do this year-round. For my dear friend, person I did my first ever television appearance on FS1 with, Peter Schrager, he won the competition with an all-time score of 52.5, which is really elite. It's one of their highest scores ever. He's so totally plugged in and did a great job. I saw they posted their mock draft standings this morning, and my mock appeared to not have been graded. And I was wounded by that, DeMonze. It was like they didn't take me seriously as a mock drafter. So I messaged them and said, hey guys, think you missed one. I'm not sure how I did. I don't think I beat Schrager, but I would appreciate it if you would tell me how I did. And they just got back to me. In the entire mock draft universe, your buddy Nick Wright, 18th place of all the mock drafts, a top 20 finish in my debut season as a mock drafter. Let me see if I can get some context for some of the experts that I beat. Let me go here, find out more. I saw these earlier. Hold on a moment. I would really like to find where the rest. Okay. All right. Here we go. So if I came in 18th, that means, listen, I'm not calling people out. I would never do that. But Charles Davis, got you. Move the sticks! Daniel Jeremiah, the king of the industry! He came in 26th. Ben Solak! Oh, from The Ringer! Post this on social. Ben Solak, hold that L. The Ringer Draft Show. You do this year round. Oh my goodness gracious. Dane Brugler, the beast. The greatest draft guide that has ever existed. Dane Brugler's the beast. 33rd place. My old friend Pete Briscoe, 35th place. Oh my goodness gracious. I beat Evan Silva.
Falcons
Benjamin Albright.
Screwed him up.
Eric Edholm. Oh, my goodness. Florio, Pro Football Talk, 51st place. How does that feel? Chris Collinsworth, he owns Pro Football Focus, 55th place. Oh, my goodness gracious. 18th place with a final score. Hold on. What was my final score? Let me go ahead and check this real quick. This is really 43.8 final score. Oh my goodness. 2 points behind Mel Kiper. Ho-ho! Oh my goodness.
I'm happy for you, Pops.
I am so happy for me, too. I decided this year that I was going to broaden my expertise. I've never been a mock drafter. Last year, my entirety of my mock drafts were Chiefs only, and I just texted them to Brett Veach repeatedly. And people made fun of me about it, but then I saw Kevin Clark at a conference a couple months ago. He took a picture of us together, texted to Veach, and Veach texted Clark, said, hey, tell him to ask Nick where my mock drafts are. So he appreciated it. Now I left Veach alone this year. He had a lot of important things to do, trying to go for a three-peat, didn't want to mess with him. And instead, I broadened my horizons to the whole league, top 20. Oh, my goodness gracious. Moved Daniel Jeremiah, the greatest, a guy who's a lot of people believe, myself included, teams-based draft selections off his big board. Dane Brugler, who created the greatest draft guide ever, beat him. Florio? Hold that L, Florio. Pin my mock draft up right next to your Andy Reid's retiring articles. Oh, my goodness gracious. All right, DeMonte, what are the listener questions? Wow, this is thrilling. I'm so excited.
Richard Winston asked, do you think the Nuggets postseason success will allow Murray to get regular season awards?
Well, I think he was going to this year because of last year, but then he got hurt. And so I think that has worked against him. All right, let's go fast. Let's try to get a couple.
Alvin asked, will the Mavs versus Clippers series go to 7 games? Who wins?
I think it does, and I think the Mavs win. I think it does go 7 at this point, and I think the Mavs win. All right, let's keep going.
Sixness says, Nick is like a 1950s cartoon villain that got dropped in the wrong time period, and I love it.
I don't even know what that means. That seems mean, but I don't know what it means. Real quick.
Reginald Pierre, Nick, do you think that once again trolling Wilds with the unanswered call tweet while the Lakers were winning was the final bit of the hubris that the sports gods ultimately punished?
No, I don't believe that I can impact the games from my couch. I don't believe in those types of jinxes, and I don't think the sports gods would punish. The sports gods would not punish LeBron James and the Lakers because I wanted to mess with Kevin Wilds. Should be a fun TV show today. I'm on with Colin in just under 90 minutes. I am on TV in just over 3 hours. Wilds wanted to fight me on the air yesterday for the first time ever. He lasted longer than anybody else I've ever worked with without wanting to fight me. It was bound to happen at some point. Today should be a great show. Talk to you guys
later. So Brew already wanted to fight.
Hey, thanks for watching. If you're still here, do me a favor. Hit the subscribe button, then hit the bell so you can be notified when we have new episodes. After you've done that, one more favor, go to your favorite audio platform of choice and subscribe there as well. Don't forget, we're live every Tuesday and Thursday, 10:30 a.m. Eastern-ish, 10:35, 10:40, it sometimes changes, but that's why you hit the bell. You hit the bell so you're notified, you subscribe, so we can get to 200,000 followers. We're right around 150,000. We'd love to get to 200,000, get DeMonte another plaque. So like, subscribe, rate, send a rating too. Do all that cool stuff. Thanks, guys.